The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
Now, authorities have confirmed that a third British national has been diagnosed with suspected hantavirus linked to the cruise ship outbreak. It was announced yesterday that plans are being made for Irish citizens abroad to self-isolate after leaving the ship. Taoiseach Micheál Martin said health authorities are working actively to bring those Irish citizens home. We're joined by the Head of Department of Biology and Director of the Human Health Research Institute at NUI Minute, Professor Paul Moyna, for more on this. Paul, thanks indeed for popping into us. So talk us through this. What happens when passengers finally get off the ship?
So in this case, the first thing to say in terms of the virus itself, if you're infected with the virus, it's quite a serious one.
It seems to be, doesn't it?
So if you look at the case fatality rate, it varies between 20 to 40%. So it is very serious. When you look at SARS-CoV-2 and COVID, you know, the case fatality rate was much less than that. It was probably less than 1% or a fraction of a percent. The good news, Shane, is that whilst it's quite serious for those, you know, who are infected with the virus, it transmits quite poorly from human to human. So the strain of the virus, when you talk about hantavirus, it's actually a family of viruses. It's not just one virus. It's a whole family of viruses. The one that these cases have been infected with actually is one that is endemic in South America, especially in Argentina and in Chile. And that's the one that if infected, causes this disease, this pulmonary syndrome. The most common in terms of route of infection is by dust aerosol from material that's been contaminated with droppings or urine from rodents. But with that strain, there has been a couple of outbreaks over the last 10, 15 years, and it can transmit human to human, but thankfully very inefficiently. So in terms of those people, the first thing that would be done there, Shane, would be to assess in terms of the level of exposure potentially to the positive cases. And then based on that, you would assess the level of risk. If there's a level of risk in terms of the person may be infected, isolation probably would be appropriate.
That's quite a long period of isolation.
Yeah, it's unusual in terms of the incubation period. So that period is the time taken from infection to manifestation of symptoms. And that can vary again between 1 to 6 to 7 weeks. Now, there are ways in terms of assessing if infection is present prior to that. So first of all, in terms of in isolation, there would be fairly straightforward monitoring in terms of taking temperature each day. But you can test for the virus. And there's two ways of testing. One is by the PCR that people will probably be familiar with from going back to COVID times. And that actually directly detects the virus. But the other way of detecting is to take a blood sample and measure if you have antibodies against the virus. So when you're infected with the virus, after about 4 to 5 days, you'll produce a type of antibody called IgM. So you can pick that up pretty quickly. So that's a way of actually detecting if you have the infection. But nonetheless, because of the long incubation period, potentially, yeah, isolation could be longer than, for example, I think with the SARS-CoV-2 virus and COVID, I think the isolation time was about 10 days or so.
Okay. Obviously, I suppose, given what we all went through between 2020 and 2023, people inevitably, when they hear about this outbreak, even if it was quite contained, they inevitably worry, oh my God, are we looking at another COVID situation here? What's your take on that?
No, I don't think so, Shane. I think it's quite low risk. As I said, for the people who are infected, it's a very serious virus.
Yeah,
like with that case fatality rate. But in terms of it, the potential to form another pandemic, I think it's highly unlikely. And the reason is that the human-to-human transmission, even though it's been demonstrated for this specific strain of virus, it is still quite inefficient. So because of that, I think it's very unlikely that this virus has the potential to form a pandemic. The other good thing is that the genetic material of this virus has been sequenced and it has been shown to be this Andes variant, which again is prevalent in Argentina. So it's not like SARS-CoV-2, where that was sort of a new virus in a way. We didn't know anything about the virus. So for the first number of months, we were trying to figure out, you know, how dangerous this virus and how it transmitted. We know about this virus. It's about greater than 99% similar to a variant that has been there in Argentina. We know what happens with outbreaks here. They tend to be quite small in number. So the outbreaks are typically maybe, you know, between 50 and 100 people. And again, the most common mode of transmission and infection is actually directly from contaminated dust and aerosols, you know, from rodents. But it should be said, yes, human-to-human transmission does take place with this, but very inefficiently.
Okay. There are Irish citizens on that boat. Mm-hmm. Have we anything to be concerned about? Are people anything concerned about in relation to that and them ultimately coming home? I presume everything will be done incredibly carefully.
Yeah, I think so, Shane. So first of all, for those two people, obviously they'll be closely monitored. They'll be closely monitored initially in terms of symptoms, and a health check will be performed for them. They may have tests done in terms of those tests I alluded to earlier, in terms of seeing is there any evidence that actually they are infected. After that, then, yeah, procedures will have to be put in place in terms of potential isolation if it was the case that they were exposed maybe to the positive cases. So again, that analysis will be done in terms of assessing the level of exposure, and then based on that level of exposure, that will determine the level of risk management that has to be done.
An awful situation for them to find themselves in.
Yeah, it's really, really tough, Shane. And it is. And especially in terms of being sort of marooned there for such a long time.
God loves
it must be, extremely difficult.
Tenerife seemed to be a little bit reluctant. The Spanish government saying, look, we have a moral obligation, we have a legal obligation to look after these people. Tenerife saying, not quite so convinced about that. Do you understand their reluctance? Are they right to be a little bit reticent?
I think the context, Shane, especially in terms of we're only, 6 years out from COVID, I think it's natural in terms of to be
fearful.
Concerned and fearful. But I think if you look at in terms of this is a variant that we know about, we know how it transmits. So we know quite a bit about this. And based on that, I think we're in a much better place in terms of how to manage that. But in terms of, the fear, and I think it's in that context, we've just come out of a pandemic, and could this be another pandemic? But as I said, the risk is extremely low.
Well, I'm going to ask you a final question, which probably leans into that, and which is a completely ignorant question in that I don't know the answer. I also don't know if it's even outrageous to ask it. But would it make you think twice about going to parts of South America, and do people need to be cautious about that?
I don't think so, Shane, because, again, most people get this. So you look at the people who are susceptible to this and the positive cases over the last number of years, it tends to be in that sort of 20 to 50 age group. And probably the reason why that is because they got infected from contaminated material as opposed from human-to-human transmission. So I think very few people probably have the virus in Argentina. Now, the virus is endemic. It is there. But you need to be careful in terms of going into regions where potentially rodents are. So if you're going to a place where, rodents have been living, you need to be careful in terms of cleaning that area, for example. So, for example, you shouldn't go in there and do dry sweeping or hoovering. You should probably do wet cleaning, so to avoid degeneration.
Okay.
So there's things you can do to try to minimise the risk, but I wouldn't have concerns.
I'm sorry, I'm curious. What is it about age 20 to 50? Why is it?
I think more in terms of that's probably the age group in terms of the nature of their employment and nature of their work.
I see. But
they're probably,
it just tends to be them in that situation.
I think so, because, and it's difficult. I've have been asked, Jane, in terms of who's more susceptible. Yeah, probably older people, immunocompromised people are more susceptible. But when you look at the positive cases, it sort of tends to be the 20 to 50. But I think that's sort of more biased in terms of the type of work that they're involved in, whether it's working on farms or whatever.
Okay, makes sense. Final question. Do you think, I'm not in any way underplaying this, the how significant this is for the people involved, but do you think in a year's time we will still be talking about the hantavirus?
No, I think it's unlikely, Shane. I think These breakouts with the hantavirus, they have happened before. There have been a couple of significant ones in Argentina probably over the last 20 years. And they have been quite small in scale. Again, that's not to reduce in terms of the impact in terms of those people, obviously, and the families that died because of the high fatality rate. But I think I would be very surprised if this virus had the potential to form sort of an epidemic.
Okay. Professor Paul Moyne, thank you indeed for those reassuring words, and thanks indeed for coming in to us on The Hard Shoulder.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. This is News Talk.